Devaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Bhagavate
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Today we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 70, Text 38. Tave hitam ko ilakshanatmane
tasmai namaste svadilakshanatmane
tave hitam ko hati sadu veditum
tave hitam ko hati sadu veditum
spamaya yidham srijato niyachchata
spamaya yidham srijato niyachchata
yad vidyamanatmataya babasate
yad vidyamanatmataya
Tasmai namaste svabhilanshanatmane
Tasmai namaste svabhilanshanatmane Tasmai namaste svabhilanshanatmane Vedam ko hati sadu veditam
Tava Tava Yo
Ihitam
Purpose
Ka
Su
Ahati
is able
Sadu
properly
Meritum
to understand
Sva
by your own
Mayaya
material energy
Idam
this universe
Sijata
who creates Niyachchata
and withdraws
Yat
which
Vidyamana
to exist
Atmataya
by relation to you
the super soul
Avabhasate
appears
Tasmai
to him
Namaha
obeisances
Te
to you
Spa
by your own nature
Vilakshana
Atmane
inconceivable.
Translation. Who can properly understand your purpose with your material energy? You expand and also withdraw this creation, which thus appears to have substantial existence, obeisances to you, whose transcendental position is inconceivable. Translation, please repeat. Who can properly understand your purpose?
Who can properly understand your purpose?
With your material energy.
You
expand and also withdraw this creation.
Which
thus appears to have substantial existence.
Obeisances to you,
whose transcendental position is inconceivable. Purport. Srila Prabhupada explains Narad's realization as follows. My dear Lord, by your inconceivable potencies, you create this cosmic manifestation, maintain it, and again dissolve it. It is by dint of your inconceivable potency only that this material world, although a shadow representation of the spiritual world, appears to be factual. No one can understand what you plan to do. What you plan to do in the future. Your transcendental position is always inconceivable to everyone. As far as I am concerned, I can simply offer my respectful obeisances unto you again and again. The word spa vilokshanatmane also indicates that Lord Krishna has his own unique nature and characteristics. No one is equal to God or greater than God. Who can properly understand your purpose? With your material energy you expand and also withdraw this creation, which thus appears to have substantial existence, obeisances to you whose transcendental position is inconceivable. So, just as the kings Dwarka were considering what to do about Jarasandha, and they got the message from the kings who had been imprisoned by Jarasandha, please release us we are surrendered unto you. Please deal with this rascal Jarasandha. This is the letter that, or the message that was delivered by the messenger of the kings. So just as that was going on, Narad Muni had all of a sudden come into the Shabha, come into the court of the Dwarka, where all the kings were assembled, and Lord Krishna, we were reading, had greeted him so nicely, praised him, worshipped him, and even though Lord Krishna is the worshipful master of everyone, as soon as he saw Narad Muni, he stood up, along with his ministers and secretaries, and everyone stood up to offer respectful obeisances to Narad Muni. So such is the case when we were talking yesterday, when a great personality comes, you have to receive them very respectfully. Today, of course, is Srila Prabhupada's disappearance anniversary, 30th year since Srila Prabhupada passed away. Of course, he passed away to the spiritual world of Krishna Loka. And so it is not like the passing of an ordinary person who again has to come for another cycle of birth and death in the material world. There is no difference between the devotee's activities in this world and the devotee's activities beyond the world. As there's that famous story of the sage who was living in the forest, and one day the prince came and saw the sage and said, came to the sage and said, "Oh, you're a great sage, I want to take the benediction from you, please bless me, please give me benediction." And the sage said, "May you live forever." So the prince, of course, was living a carefree life, riches and opulence. So the sage said, "May you live forever." The sage, of course, the prince was very happy, but the sage, of course, knew that the prince is enjoying the karma of his previous actions. He is a prince. And after, because he is living irresponsibly, when his pious credits are finished, he will have to suffer in the next life. So he said, "May you live forever." And the next was the brahmachari. He came there, and he saw the sage, wanted to take the benediction. And the sage said, "Oh, may you die immediately." Because the brahmachari is practicing the tapasya, and he's in a very good situation now. In the future it may not be the same, so better die now, because then in your next life you'll be very benefited. And then of course the butcher came, and the sage said, "May you not live, may you not die, because your life is hell now, and in the next life it will be more hell." And then the devotee came, and the sage said, "Well, it doesn't matter, you live, you die, you are doing the same activities this life, forever." So, Narad Muni is like that, travelling around, Srila Prabhupada, all the great devotees are the same. Their activities are eternal. They are very great personalities, great man. Not ordinary man, very great man. And when they come to the world, it is on the mission of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Narad Muni is especially empowered to fulfill the mission of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, Lord Krishna himself is present. He can certainly fulfill his own mission. But he likes the devotees to assist him, and not only that, but to take credit for doing so many things which he himself empowers them to do. He likes, just like Krishna, as far as the battle of Kurukshetra, just by thinking about killing all the demons, that they would have been killed, and Krishna could have done everything just within a moment. But he likes to have Arjuna take the credit, and speaking of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is asking so many questions. That is to glorify his devotee. Krishna likes to glorify. He enjoys the glorification of his devotee more than he enjoys the glorification of himself. He yemi bhakta jana pata nami bhaktas chachanjana mad bhaktana chi bhaktas yemi bhakta tamamata. He who says he is my devotee is not my devotee. But he who says he is a devotee of my devotee, he is my devotee. So this is Krishna, and we were speaking yesterday that if a great personality, a great devotee comes, even if the pujari is doing the aarti, Prabhupada said in one lecture, and even if he is doing the aarti, if a great person, he can stop the aarti to Krishna and come out and greet the person and then go again and finish the aarti. This is the position of someone coming. Even an ordinary guest, as one Vedic injunction, even if an ordinary guest comes to your house, you should treat them like God, according to the Vedic injunction. You should greet guests very nicely. Even they may be your enemy. Just like when Krishna and Arjuna and Bhimsen went to Jarasandha disguised as Brahmanas. They were dressed up as Brahmanas, but Jarasandha was looking at them and he was a bit suspicious. I thought he'd seen them somewhere before. Yet he greeted them and he looked after them and offered them a nice place to stay. And you know, supplied them their meals, supplied everything. And when they said that we actually come to beg a fight with you, he still, he laughed, he derided them, but still he looked after them. This is the position. So one has to be hospitable, even in the ordinary sense. Of course, this is not an ordinary pastime, but in the ordinary sense, one has to be hospitable. One has to look after, greet someone. Even if you're a poor man, you can offer someone a seat, a glass of water. So when great personalities come, then you have to receive them respectfully and worship them, glorify them. We see Krishna doing that. So Krishna is showing by example how to do things in the world. Lord Chaitanya came. He is Krishna, Radha and Krishna. He came as a devotee of Krishna. Krishna came, he showed by example. Okay, you know, he would be the supreme personality. He would engage with his devotees here. The asuras would come. He would kill the asuras. And from time to time, he would show the example. Lord Chaitanya came and he was devotee all the time showing the example. Just to show how to be a devotee. How to engage in serving others. Serving others. So this is a devotee's motto, really, you could say. How to serve others. How to serve Krishna and how to serve others. Now the advanced devotee doesn't just see Krishna. He sees Krishna, he sees the energy of Krishna, he sees the representatives of Krishna, he sees God in everyone. He doesn't think, we were saying yesterday, that we don't think that God is just here in the temple or God is just in the deity. I have got respect to the deity or I've got respect for the temple, but everywhere else I'm not respectful. God is everywhere. God is within every person. Of course, one has to understand with advancement of knowledge what are the different levels of the position of each individual. The tiger in the jungle, also God is within him. But we have to be cautious when we approach the tiger. We don't go immediately, "How are you, Prabhu?" because he will eat you. So we have to have some common sense. Prabhupada used to tell us many times, "You disciples of mine, you have no common sense," he said. Sometimes when he was chastised, "You have no common sense." One time he actually said, "Krishna consciousness is 99% common sense. You just have to add Krishna to the common sense and that is Krishna consciousness." So sometimes we don't have the common sense. But, you know, we should understand all these things. If you haven't got your own sense, then borrow the good intelligence of Krishna and his representatives. Learn from them what is the good sense and the good intelligence, knowledge and all these things. So therefore, Krishna knows that the people, especially in Kali Yuga, they don't have even the common sense, they don't understand about the spiritual life, they're losing their ability to be respectful to one another, to appreciate one another, to have loving exchanges with one another. So therefore, Krishna comes again as Lord Chaitanya to show all that. How to respect one another, how to have loving exchanges with one another, appreciate, have gratitude. Lord Chaitanya shows that. He shows that. So, we have to see what is the example of Lord Chaitanya. And we have to follow the example of Lord Chaitanya follow in the footsteps of those who are following Lord Chaitanya, starting from the Goswamis, the six Goswamis, and then coming through all the Acharyas, and then coming to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, Srila Prabhupada. We are very fortunate that Srila Prabhupada is teaching us what is the mood of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya is teaching us what is the mood of the proper devotee in service to Krishna. So Krishna here is showing how to receive Narad Muni. He's glorifying Narad Muni. And they were just discussing, as I said before, about what to do with Jarasandha. They were hearing the message of the kings imprisoned by Jarasandha, and they were discussing Narad Muni. So after glorifying Narad Muni, and you know, yesterday we read that Krishna says of Narad Muni, "It is certain that the three worlds today have attained freedom from all fear because of your presence. Such is your influence. Such is the power of a great devotee." Prabhupada, when he came, such was his influence that, you know, generally people in Kali Yuga, that there's no question of spiritual life for them. Practically, they're so entangled and so immersed in materialistic life that they don't understand, and they cannot even begin to approach what is spiritual life. They are so covered, so dark. Whereas the other morning we were speaking about the dark night. When there's a dark night, it's very so dark you can hardly see anything. But immediately when the sun comes, darkness is gone. So when Krishna comes, when the representative of Krishna comes, immediately all the darkness, just like that, is gone. So Prabhupada came and went to so many countries all over the world. He brought the light. So you travel throughout the three worlds, Krishna says of Narada, nothing is unknown to you in God's creation. Nothing is unknown to you. So the representative of Krishna being directly in contact with the Supreme Personality, what can he not know? He can know everything. Just has to ask Krishna. So, but then Krishna goes on in a very mysterious way and asks about the Pandavas. Please tell us what the Pandavas intend to do. So, Narad Muni in this verse today, or yesterday's verse, or today, who can understand your purpose? Your position is inconceivable. So, who can understand Krishna? His ways are very mysterious, especially to ordinary people. Even for the devotees, it is inconceivable. What to speak of ordinary people? Mysterious. Why is Krishna all of a sudden asking about the Pandavas? We were just talking about Jarasandha after finishing hearing about the kings and then glorifying, receiving Narad Muni. You would expect that the conversation would go back again to Jarasandha and the imprisoned kings, but all of a sudden Krishna asks about the Pandavas. Now Narad Muni says that you come, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you play like an ordinary human being, you are the controller of this material energy, it is expanded from you, you maintain it, you withdraw it again, it is actually unreal. Here it is mentioned, it's like a shadow. It is like a shadow of the reality. Now, shadow is never considered reality. Only the most foolish persons chase a shadow. Or, you know, sometimes you see a dog chase his own shadow or something like that. Or a bird, run after its own reflection in the glass or the mirror, and so when you see like that, you think, well, it was a foolish bird. And so I was just up at New Govardhan, one peacock went to one car, it was like a black reflecting, you know, shiny car, and just saw his own reflection in the car, and was picking up, running, and, you know, he thought it was another peacock. So I'm thinking, watching that peacock, what a foolish peacock. He's thinking it's another peacock, he was picking at the car. All worked up. It was all worked up, thinking another peacock had come and challenging him. And he's a very clever peacock. He, whatever he did back. And it, you know, and it kept coming back, and it was going on for hours with this thing. So sometimes the dog chases his shadow. Sometimes the peacock's there. The bird sees the reflection. But it is foolish. It is just a reflection. It is just a shadow. No intelligent person accepts the shadow as the reality. But Krishna is so clever that even though this world is not real, it is like a shadow, a reflection of the spiritual, all the living entities who are in this world accept that as reality, and it seems so real. Krishna has arranged it in such a way, you are inconceivable. How you do this, it's non-real, it's a shadow, but somehow or other you've arranged it that it appears so real, and everyone is accepting it in that way. You are inconceivable. This is Narad Muni is saying like that. Obeisances unto you. He says this existence appears to be substantial. I mean, a shadow is real. It is real. There's a shadow. But here, and this is another point that Narad Muni says, it appears to be substantial, but the shadow is not really substantial in comparison to the reality. So it appears to be substantial. We are living in this world, and we think it is, you know, substantial, and we make plans and so on and so forth. We're so covered over, and we're so identifying, and we're so convinced of the substance of this world. So this is the Maya. I have seen many times the insurmountable power of your Maya, Narad Muni says here. Even great demigods like Lord Brahma are bewildered by this reflection, by this shadow. Even Lord Brahma, great, most intelligent person of the universe, he is bewildered. He is confused. He is bewildered. He is making plans. See? Oh, all-encompassing Lord, it does not surprise me that you disguise yourself by your own energies while moving among the created beings as fire covers its own light. You have so many purposes to fulfill. Who knows what all those purposes are? There's another Buddha saying like that. Who knows what all those purposes are? You are very mysterious. You are God, but you play like an ordinary person. You walk amongst us as if you were an ordinary person, but you are not. Who knows why you do these things? How you do these things? We don't know why you do them, let alone how you do them. So, here Krishna is asking about the Pandavas. Now, there are different. Now, later on, it is explained here by Sukadeva Goswami, explains why Krishna is asking about the Pandavas. Because Maharaj Yudhisthira wanted to perform the Rajasuya Yajna. And Lord Krishna wanted that Yudhisthira Maharaj be glorified and established as the most exalted king of the world. Simultaneously, Jarasandha had to be taken care of. So, now Krishna's thinking both purposes can be served, but later on we find that Krishna himself remains silent and asks Uddhava to answer, because Narad Muni says to Krishna, later on we'll read that, he says to Krishna, because Krishna's asked the question, what are the Pandavas, what are they doing, what do they want to do? And Narad Muni replies, oh, Yudhisthira Maharaj wants to do the Rajasuya Yajna, and he wants you to come there and be his guest. And Krishna says that, oh yes, I want to go, here's my devotee, the Pandavas are my devotees, I want to go there and participate in the Rajasuya sacrifice. But then all the kings there at Dwarka were not very satisfied, because they were talking about Jarasandha, and Jarasandha was a menace to the world. And wait a minute, Krishna, now you're going to the Rajasuya sacrifice, but what about Jarasandha? What about all the imprisoned kings? Here they sent the messenger, and now you want to go to the Rajasuya sacrifice, and you will be gone for months. What about all these imprisoned kings there suffering? So there's a dilemma. So, but of course, Krishna knew everything. He knew how both purposes could be achieved, yet he didn't respond. He asked, He acknowledged, yes, oh yes, Jarasandha, the imprisoned king, that is very important. But also, Rajasuya sacrificed by King Yudhishthira, that is also important. What to do? This is a little dilemma. What to do? This is a dilemma. One is calling here, the other one is calling there. Krishna is very mysterious. He arranged this dilemma, but he is so mysterious, he acts like, oh, it is a dilemma, he's confused, he doesn't know what to do. How can God not know what to do? But he acts like that. I don't know what to do. What to do? This is almost like he's saying, it's too much for me, I don't know what to do. He arranged it all, but then he's saying, oh, I don't know what to do. Oh, we better ask Uddhava. Uddhava is very intelligent. So let's ask Uddhava. So Uddhava, he is very humble and he praises Krishna. And it's Krishna himself who empowers Uddhava to say what he's going to say. Isn't it? So Uddhava, being very intelligent, he says, yes, both situations have to be attended to. But there is a way to attend to both, and the purposes of both can be fulfilled simultaneously. He said that Yudhishthira Maharaj wants to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice, but of course, to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice, all the kings have to acknowledge that he is the most exalted. So, to achieve this, generally, the kings who do this sacrifice have to go and send their emissaries to all the different areas and request the kings to offer their allegiance to the emperor and give the offerings and give respects to the emperor, and all the different places have to be visited in this way. So most likely when they visit the Magadha, the king of Magadha, Jarasandha, he won't agree. So before the Rajasuya sacrifice can be started, the emissaries have to be sent out. So when they go there to Jarasandha, he won't agree. So then you will have to fight with him. If someone doesn't agree, generally it's settled by some combat. So therefore, when he takes up he takes up the challenge, we can organize that he be defeated. So the Rajasuya, the whole procedure of Rajasuya sacrifice can go in this way, and Jarasandha will have to fight, and we can arrange that he be defeated. So then he suggested that there was some discussion about who should go, who should fight with Jarasandha. And then there was decided. Then Uddhava himself said, "Oh, he gave the plan. You should go. You should go, Krishna, Arjuna, and Bhimsen." He won't fight with Arjuna because he's younger, and Krishna, he detests you, probably won't even fight with him. But Bhimsen, he will see Bhimsen as his equal. See, the kings in the old days, they didn't like to fight with lesser personalities because then and that would be demeaning to them. Oh, the big king, he fought with a wimp type character. You know, that wouldn't be very good for his reputation, and he would be, you know, called all sorts of names. Oh yeah, he fights with all the weak ones, you know. But if he fights with strong ones and defeats them, then his reputation is strong. So Jarasandha would fight with Bhimsen. So all of you should go. If you go directly as you are, then, you know, Jarasandha may come with his army and want to fight you immediately. But if you go as Brahmins disguised, he will welcome you in, and then you can reveal your identity later. And then he will fight with Bhimsen. So Uddhava suggested all these things and they went. And so simultaneously, Jarasandha, we know that Jarasandha could not be defeated. He could only be defeated in one way. Who knows? You know the story of Jarasandha? Was there in the Krishna book, who can remember the story of Jarasandha, how he was born? Who was his father? His father was a Brihadratha who and his wife were childless. So he went to Kosaka. He was a sage in the forest. He asked Kosaka to help him. So the sage gave him one mango, one fruit or something like that, and give it to your wife. But the king had two wives, actually, and the sage, he didn't know. So when the king went back, he thought, well, what am I going to do? If I give one to the one and I don't give to the other, there's going to be trouble. So then he divided the fruit in two. He gave half to one, half to the other. So both queens took the fruit, but when they gave birth, one half child, other half child. So the king, they were horrified to see it all. So the king said, ask someone to take and bury the body outside in the forest. And when they did like that, one witch was there, Jara, and she found the two halves and she put them together. And just by automatically, some miraculous thing, when she just touched them together, they came together. And the child came, a boy, grew up. His name, of course, Jarasandha. And so, because he was joined in that way, when Bhimsen was fighting him, I think the fighting was going on for how long?
28
days. 28 days or something like that. And Bhimsen came to Krishna and said, frankly, I don't think that no one was getting the upper hand. And Bhimsen came and said, well, I don't think I can defeat this Jarasandha, he's so powerful. So Krishna gave him the clue because he knew his birth. He said, yeah, you have to hold him down and split him, Masunda, Jarasandha. Tear him apart. So Bhimsen did like that and threw him down, put one leg on his leg and got the other. And this way he was killed. So Jarasandha, then they went back, of course, and performed the Rajasuya sacrifice. Krishna stayed there. And so, inconceivable, all these things, how they come about, very mysterious. But Krishna has his plan. And so too, the representatives, Prabhupada, had his plan. Who could understand? He went to America, he had his vision for so many temples around the world. No one could actually, when you talk to the early disciples of Prabhupada in New York, and they say like that, they said, who are we? Just call him Swami. Swami had such a vision. We didn't understand what his vision was, actually, how he wanted to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. We just thought that he was one Indian Swami, that he would have like a little center here in New York, you know, a few of us would go along, and we'd continue like that, you know, we'd just continue like that. They thought like that. We thought like that. We thought it would just continue like that, just like, you know. Lived in a different apartment, and they got in that 26 Second Avenue. Just a small little place, right? Some of you have been there. Small little place. So we thought it was just going to go be like that. Hare Krishna would be just one little storefront, and that would be it. But Prabhupada had his vision for all over the world, for so many centers and colleges and gurukulas and farms. He had all in his head before. So came to pass. Now we're seeing the manifestation. So just as Krishna is mysterious, so are the representatives of Krishna. When they come, we don't immediately understand. And it is said that actually, someone who is just beginning devotee cannot understand the mind of a very, very advanced devotee, nor should the beginning devotee try to understand. Just like the devotee doesn't try to understand all Krishna's opulences and inconceivable. The devotee knows you cannot understand. He just surrenders to Krishna. The materialists, they always try to uncalculate, try to measure God and try to, you know, equal God by their science or technology or research or whatever. You know, in so many ways, actually, either consciously or unconsciously, they try to measure God, try to understand the Supreme, whether they accept as God or Supreme Force or whatever. They try to understand, they try to measure it all. But the devotee knows it's immeasurable. This universe is just but one universe. It's created, destroyed, maintained. So many countless universes, and this, all these universes are just a small little section of a distant energy compared to the spiritual energy. So the devotee just surrenders totally to Krishna and accepts, your position is inconceivable, obeisance is unto you. You are always transcendental, although you appear to be just one of us. This is Narada Muni's comment or statement about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Alright, I'll read this verse again. Who can properly understand your purpose? With your material energy, you expand, also withdraw this creation, which thus appears to have substantial existence. Obeisance to you, this transposition is inconceivable. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Sometimes I was just talking about the ghosts.
The what?
About the ghosts, how they want to enjoy if they want to possess another body, or what kind of soul, and they want to enjoy it.
ghosts.
Yes. And with the mind of other person, when the person enjoys, they can enjoy. But wouldn't that be same?
Sorry, what?
That wouldn't be a same for a conditioned soul who wants to enjoy separately from Krishna. And therefore says, we are also getting involved in that way. And we want to enjoy, and we think that we enjoy, when our mind enjoys material mind, the covering with the body we have taken on, also we are thinking, we are enjoying, we are thinking, we are that one. We are kind of like...
We're enjoying body. Through another, you're trying to relate it to the ghosts. So we are like ghosts, actually.
Yes.
Ghosts in the material world, we are. All of us. I can see that. Yeah, I understand. It's like ghosts try to enjoy through another body and mind, so we are trying to enjoy through something that is separate from us, this body and this mind, which is not us. So we are like the ghosts, trying to enjoy separately something that is not actually real. All right. Very good. Yes.
Most devotees at some stage find themselves in a situation where they have some sort of a dilemma where they're sort of being pulled in two ways. It seems to be they feel like they have to make a choice, oh, we should do things in this way, and why not, we should do it this way. But we all come across that sort of thing. So, what are the guidelines for being able to make the right decision?
Guru Shastra Sadhu. There's the guidelines. But so you have to be like that. You have to see what are the Guru's instructions. And there's many ways to do a thing. Many ways to engage in Krishna service. Many ways to spread Krishna consciousness. You have to see what Prabhupada said. Especially in our movement, you know, Prabhupada's words on that. We have to take serious, give serious consideration to that. And as we do, you know, I know on the level of the governing body of ISKCON, whenever we make a decision, we see what Prabhupada has made a comment about that from before. Of course, you have to take into consideration Kalapatradesha, time, place, and circumstance. And you have to see what the Shastra says, and you have to see what the other Vaishnavas say. One time in Calcutta, someone was wanting to do one. There was about 10 or 11 senior devotees in the room with Prabhupada, and one was presenting one thing, and then, but the others, other 8 or 9, were presenting it in another way. They seemed to agree with each other, but this one was pretty stuck on one way. So then Prabhupada, after some time, he intervened and he said to that devotee, he said, well, generally, what you're suggesting is all right, but the others are saying other things, so generally we do like this, he said. When 10 or 11 say one way and only one says the other way, we generally go with 10 or 11. So generally that's the case. You have to see what... But there also has to be in line with the Guru and the Shastra. Or maybe simultaneously many things can be done at once. It's not that it's always the case that you have to do one thing or the other thing. You can do, yes, you can do that, and you can also do this. You can do 3 or 4 things. Yes, your way is good, the other way is good, do both. Oh no, this is not good, this is better. So, depending on the circumstance, you can have to make a decision like that.